technology from year after year. But we are very grateful that we can have a relationship with you, because our relation together is with the one who is the God at work. And we know he has been at work with you here at Bethel. And you have been so involved in mission points around the world, which makes you a very mission-minded church, which has to begin with your mission to the person who is sitting next to you, who may be and who may not be yet a child of God. So mission is a word that has a very large meaning, which should involve every one of us in one way or another. So here I am with you tonight. I'm a missionary, but so are you. And I want to talk at the end more about what you can do as one person, as we think about what God has given to us as a role. But the years have passed. Barbara and I have been in Geneva for 47 years with the same church. They may have gotten tired of us, but they allowed us to stay until we made a decision this past year to come back and move back to the States. Very difficult decision, but we are now pretty much at ease with a decision. We're not sure what God has in mind for us working out of the United States, but we continue to work, and much of the things we did in Geneva, we can continue to do from Searcy, where we moved. And this transition, though it has been pretty emotional, somewhat radical for us, as far as God at work, hasn't changed much in terms of our purpose, what we're trying to do. So through you and other churches, we are reaching out to the French-speaking world. And so as I first will then try to do, I'll give you some overview of that work through the slides. This still is one way to present what has been happening, still is underway. Because they say, you know, a picture is worth 1,000 words, and I don't think you want to have me here with you until midnight, so we'll go this a little faster with pictures. You know, when I came over, now it's been a month. We've been back in the States for a month now. When I arrived, I realized I didn't have an English Bible. I've been working from the French, and so when I arrived, we came without an English Bible, so I bought one. This is the English Standard Version. I don't know what you may be using here. I don't know even what's best, but I'm beginning to read the Bible again in English, and I'll go through that this year and see what kind of version this is. But what I'm finding already has been very encouraging to me, to realize that God speaks through many languages. He speaks through many versions of the Bible, but as he does speak, there is a certainty that what he says changes people. And that's why we're here, to change people. And if that doesn't happen, then it's in vain what we're trying to do. Every time that Jimmy preaches, he wants you to change. Because I know in studying, he changed. And this continues to be the case for everyone who presents messages and studies. So let's look at some of the slides. And then after the end, I'll say a few more words. I suppose you see this all right as the lights are. Okay, we'll go with that. So welcome you to the French-speaking world. The French-speaking world is one that is very, very large in terms of the fact that they say in 2025, there'll be some 500 million people speaking French. Now, as you think about that, you realize that there's not very many workers in and among those 500 million people. In fact, I recently read an article by a French newspaper, a very recognized paper, that by 2050, French will be the dominant language of the world. Now, you think about Chinese and, of course, English right now, but by 2050, because of demographics, families who are growing the fastest. In those countries where French is spoken, those families are growing the fastest. And because of this, simply through the growing families, French will be spoken more so than English or Chinese by 2050. So it's a very important part of the world. As you look at this picture, you see that it covers parts of all the world. As you go from, of course, Europe to Canada, to the Pacific Islands, to the Caribbean Islands, and, of course, a large measure in Africa. These are simply different countries where French is spoken. Look more closely at the display outside in the lobby. You'll see that this covers so many that you may have not realized are French-speaking countries. There are in Africa 22 French-speaking countries, more than the English-speaking countries. And of course, most of the mission work that we've been involved in have gone to English-speaking countries, naturally, because of the language. But in the 22 French-speaking countries right now, there is no American or European missionary. 22 countries in Africa. And there's a reason for that. One reason is that I don't recruit Americans or Europeans anymore to go into French Africa, and I explain in a moment why that is so. So we have been in Geneva, working out of there for 47 years, and we also have been married 59 years, so we've kind of paralleled our life together in Geneva, and we've decided to go another year, try it another year, and then we'll see what happens from there. Barbara and I are our team. She works with the correspondence courses, and in doing so, she touched the lives of thousands and thousands of people. Then when there's hard questions, she give them to me, and we work together on that. But I make trips then to do follow-up with when there's many students in a common area, I try to go and see them, perhaps with a campaign or simply with someone traveling with me, in order to see if we can start a church there. And if there's enough students, we have seminars and work together with them, then try to begin the church in those areas. And that has happened over and over. So it's been in a very effective, fruitful work, this particular method. Time does pass, and as we think about ourselves, we know it's not going to go on forever. So just to mention to you what I spoke to the elders about earlier, we have moved to Searcy. We plan to continue our work there. We have support that will continue through next year. Then we'll have some Social Security help from there, but we want to continue our work while we're in Geneva, while we're in Searcy. And here is our house in Searcy, just to show you the reality of this change. We had this house built with our daughter, and we'll be living there just right next to the campus. So when you come to Searcy, come and see us. We even can have a guest room for you. Not all at one time, but you can come and be with us. Right next to us, you see on the slide is another house, and this is our son David. Both David and Bonnie teach at Harding University. And right next to that house is a third house, and that's Paige's. There's David and Paige. That's Paige's parents' house. They have just built. So David and Paige, right in the middle, have the two in-laws on each side. And I'm not sure how that's going to work out, but we think it'll work out fine. But in Geneva, we had a great life. Geneva is a beautiful city. We enjoyed living there, but we helped to get the church started there, and through the years, it has grown to where it's independent, has its own leadership, and we're very happy to be a part of that as our life, which is a major part of our life. You know, still, when I think about it, you know, when I think about home, that's Geneva, but eventually we'll become more accommodating to the idea of being in Searcy. We'll be missing a lot of things. Of course, I miss the Alps. We enjoy the climbing of the Alps and being among these places where there's snow on top the year round. And there's not very many like that around Searcy. So we will be missing this kind of environment. Also, we miss other things. We miss good coffee. I haven't yet found some good American coffee. We miss cheese. You don't have much of a variety of cheese. The French have 356 kinds of cheeses, and we learned to love that. So a lot of things we'll miss. We try to promote the French work wherever we go, and so we have displays that we put up in different places. We were at the Harding Lectureship with a display, went from there to OCU during this trip to have a display to try to promote the French-speaking world. But as we do so, we're not trying within itself to recruit workers as such. I'll explain that in just a moment. Here we have a display that we put up of the French Bible, the history of the French Bible. We did this for the French-speaking people in Europe. What you see there is nothing. This is darkness. And that's a world. That's the world where we are. And in that world, we are to be shining lights. Of course, Jesus spoke of that. But in Philippians 2:14, Paul spoke of that, that you are. He didn't say be. He said you are flaming lights in a corrupt world. And that's very true. And that's what we should be. And so presence is so much necessary. The church is not very strong in Europe. We need to be, though, there as a presence, as a light. But this passage in Philippians 2:14-15 continues and said, and carrying the word of truth. So we have to have a presence. We call this evangelism, friendship evangelism. But at some moment, we have to speak out. And we have to give a testimony of our conversion to draw people to Christ with the gospel. But here is the light that we are to speak, and that light involves both our lives and the word that we carry. So as we carry light, we do so to two different major types of world in the French-speaking world. We have those who are, in quotes, Christian, have some contact with Christianity, and then those who are of the Muslim world. We have quite a bit of success in the Christian world because they have a certain knowledge or perhaps even respect for the Bible. But in the Muslim world, it's something else. And because of that, we're having to use some other methods, which also we'll talk about. Much of the French-speaking world is very poor. And because of that, we work with poverty. And it's difficult sometimes because that tugs at our heart. But we don't know how to respond to such a mass of need. And because of that, sometimes we become very frustrated. On the other hand, we have people that we can work with. And when we work with one person, already that's our response, even though we cannot perhaps work with a mass of people. And so we have widows. Her husband died in a flood. And orphans, children that have no more a father. And then we work with those who have very poor situations in their gospel work. This is a church building. This is in Mundu, Chad. This is the preacher there. They've made some renovations since this picture, but it shows that their facilities are so different from what we have. When they are able to imagine, if they could, the pastry shops in Europe, perhaps some here in the States, there's no comparison to what we are trying to do because we can't feed everyone. But we can try to bring to them, get this to go, to bring to them the kind of literature that gives the word. And so the word as food, spiritual food, we can bring to them. And we find that the Correspondence Course program is one of the better methods to do that. Whether you're talking about World Bible School or the World English Institute, we work with both. But we have it in French, and so we have the kind of material that we can use in French in these countries. We try to use methodology that would be up to date, and so we make use of the internet, and a growing part of our work are those requests for the correspondence courses that come in by internet. We're going through a phase of that right now and trying to increase the amount of responses on the internet. It's faster, it's cheaper, and at the same time still very efficient. Particularly, though, we are looking at French Africa. French Africa is a huge area. You take just one country, the Congo, the old Zaire. It's bigger than France, bigger than most of Europe, bigger than Texas, and just one country in Africa. So much of our work has been then with eyes on French Africa, and there we are having responses that help us to try to assimilate into their culture to the extent they listen to us. And so it's a kind of work that is very encouraging, but you have to have some wisdom in knowing how to do it. And one way that we're trying to do it, I mentioned to you that I'm not trying to recruit Americans or Europeans to go to Africa. And the reason for that is there are now 6 or 7 Bible schools in French Africa. These two, we have one in the Congo, we have one in Benin. And the graduates from these schools are much more efficient than we are. When we go in, we have a language barrier, we have cultural barriers, and it's very expensive. They can go in knowing the language already, being culturally adapted already to where they go, and of course, much, much less expensive to support these men who are graduates of these Bible schools. So right now, if we're going to go into Europe, go into Africa, we're going to have to go with people who are trained. And so you take an example. Here is the Zaire, the Democratic Republic of the Congo. In Kinshasa, we have a Bible school. And in this Bible school, we have about 15 men every 2 years who are graduated. And you have been supporting 2 of these men for each class. You're doing that now, the Church of Bethel. And what we have over the last 10, 12 years that you've been involved, we have 70 to 80 men who have gone out who have been trained in a Bible school. We don't need to bring in Americans, Europeans for that purpose, to go back into those local churches or to go back and establish churches in their area. They can do it better than we can. We can use Americans and Europeans who are well-trained themselves to go in for training sessions, for campaigns, for helping them, holding up their arms in what they're doing there already in Africa. Here in Kinshasa, at this Bible school, these are 3 of the teachers. And again, I do not know of any American working or teaching in these Bible schools. They're all nationals. Here are some of the facilities they have in Kinshasa. We helped to build that building for them a few years ago. The church has been established there. This is a picture of the students. I can get this to go ahead. The students and the church that meets in that Bible school. Because anytime you have a Bible school and the students are active, the church will either be established or will grow. Now, just across the river, this is the Congo River. There is another capital, because Kinshasa is the capital of Zaire. There's another capital, which is the capital of the Republic of the Congo, and this is Brazzaville. And this is the only place in the world where 2 capitals are facing each other across a river between the 2 Congos. Now, in this country, there is the capital of Brazzaville, and we had a campaign there. And at this campaign, we brought in and developed the students that had been in the correspondence courses, and were able then to establish the church in Brazzaville. We also had 2 men. This first one here is Chrysostom Samba, the long story behind his conversion, and then his coming back home to the Congo to start the church in Pointe Noire. Pointe Noire means black point. I don't know why it's called that. But the church has started there. And the other, Clovis, has started the church and works with the church in Brazzaville. And these men developed out of both the Bible schools and Bible correspondence courses. So we feel that this method is very efficient. This is a worker in the Chad, the country of Chad, and he has been working a lot with prisoners, and a lot of our correspondence courses are with prisoners in French Africa. This is an opportunity that I had to work in a campaign in the Togo. Togo, along the line with Ghana, there's a tribe that we worked with for a week and had 60, 70 baptisms during that time. But just to say that it's so very easy to go into a courtyard, ask, can we study the Bible for a while? They'll bring up chairs and benches and get sitting around. And it's easy then to speak to them. They'll listen. And so it's encouraging. It's very much an optimistic kind of work that we do there. Not everyone listens well. Sometimes there are distractions. But in that context, we learn to adjust. What I want to show you with this picture is Barry Baggett. He's the second one on your left. Barry Baggett is working out of Creve Hall Church in Nashville, and he has set up there a distribution point for French literature. He worked first 16 years in the Ivory Coast, and then he came and set up this distribution point in Nashville, and he is an essential part to the French work. Anytime you can support that work, it's a good work he's doing there with Creve Hall. But Barry is going to be receiving about half of the books that we printed while we were in Geneva. We printed there 42 books for the French work while we were there. That was part of our work there, publications. And so we're carrying a truckload of books, and that will be then stored in Nashville. Just to indicate how that's here on American soil, but still reaching out to the French world. One thing that we do continuously in need is distribute Bibles everywhere they need Bibles. And so we get them to them, and this is just an illustration of Bibles that were given to a church showing that they had received it. Sometimes there's risk in the work we do, but this risk, if you're prudent, if you have prudence, you can overcome. And I'm thinking about the eastern part here that you see of the Congo. In this Zaire, this area of eastern Zaire, there are two provinces, northern Kivu and southern Kivu, and this is the risk area. We've gone into there. This is where the civil war is continuing. That's where there's a lot of violence against the women on that eastern part of the Congo. But we're going in there, and churches have been established. In fact, they are growing quite rapidly along that eastern border of the Congo, and then going over into Burundi and into Rwanda. And this, I think, shows the picture of the map of Rwanda, which is with the Burundi, where they had the genocides back in the early part of the 90s. But now we have discovered what we could call a restoration movement that's going on in Rwanda. And there in that restoration movement that we first heard of started with 9 churches, there are now 16 churches. And we're going in there and had seminars with the leaders of these churches. And as far as we can tell now, they identify with us as churches of Christ around the world. And as we work with people like that who are so open, receptive, and they made changes in the way they worship and in their fundamental beliefs, but willing to do so because they accepted the principle of the restoration of the New Testament church. So this can be done, and it's being done in places like Rwanda. Here's one of the churches meeting under a tent sort of place. This is some of the leaders of those churches who came in for the seminars. This is where we had some of the seminars, showing that the facilities are not that great, but we're still able to teach and to help train these men. This is a man with his wife who is kind of the motor of this restoration movement in Rwanda. You might compare him to Alexander Campbell in a way. A very competent man, very zealous to promote the principle of New Testament Christianity. Another man who is in Burundi, who came through the correspondence courses, as did Jean-Baptiste, the other man I just showed you in Rwanda. This is Akimbe. He's in Burundi. And none of these men, neither Jean-Baptiste nor Akimbe, are supported. Their work they do on their own. And this is what we're pushing. Neither in Rwanda, neither in Burundi is any American money or European money going into those countries. And we want to keep that principle going, that we do not support the nationals as such or build buildings as such. These are things they can do themselves. So here are some of the men who have been studying. And as they listen, you can tell the intensity of their regard, of their look. They're hungry, they're thirsty for the study that they can do with us. And then they go forth with that and hopefully can have Bibles along the way to share with others. So we jump over now to another aspect of our work, and that is as we work with the children's camp in France. It's a different kind of word, but it's the same kind of word because we're still teaching the gospel. So here is one of the baptisms at the children's camp where we had last summer 124 children who were in the camp. 2 weeks of intense spiritual training in a beautiful area of the central part of France. And in this facility that we have, we can have up to 160 beds available. And so with the staff and then with the children, it's full every summer. Here is the children. Here are the children giving a choral presentation in a Catholic church building in a village close by the camp. And we have means of trying to present the gospel. And this is a time when we had the theme of Narnia. And we had the Lion King, who then had influence on the young people as we try to have at the camp. I have the opportunity of teaching children there. This past year, we had 54 teenagers, that is 13 to 17. And I was teaching that group of young people. So I tried to, communicate with them and tell them about what's happening around the world, including in Africa, so I was ready for that. Giving some indication of what happens in the cultural aspect of these places where we go. Sometimes we have to really work hard to carry all the equipment, but there are ways to do it, and this is plan B if you don't get through with plan A. And also, Barbara and I, as time passed, we're not quite as capable physically as we did in the past, but we're continuing, and we'll find a way to get it done if the Lord permits. So just a few slides for you to give you an idea of what we've been involved in and where we are right now in our work in the French-speaking world. As I said earlier, we miss the mountains, and we think, God made that. But God made those people who are living in poverty as well. And he made those people, and they're part of his creation, those who are living in darkness, but perhaps have not had the opportunity to see the light. And so we're working with these people in the French-speaking world around the world. So look a little closer at the display outside. And as you do so, you'll get some idea of the extent of the French-speaking world. And that's God's work. And this is God's work that we're trying to be involved in. A theme that we use both in Geneva and our work, as you look at that sign, it says, Avançons ensemble. And those of you who know French, you can translate that for us. Avançons ensemble, let us advance together. Let us move ahead together. And we do that as we are involved in a common mission effort, both through the supporting churches and those who go out. This particular picture intrigues me and at the same time encourages me because it suggests in the fiery furnace, the king that looked in and he saw the three men, they were not being consumed, but the text says that he saw someone like the Son of God walking there among them. Now, I'm not sure what he meant by Son of God in his context, but for us, we can understand that when we go out, God is with us, and through Jesus Christ and his Spirit, we do not work alone. Whether it's here locally in your own area or across the seas, we are not alone. And in view of that, then we can have confidence that this is not our work. This is God's work. God is at work, because when he came on this earth, the king came in a king-sized bed, and with this very modest beginning, this king of the universe decided to walk with us, and in the great commission that we use in Matthew 28, it says with all these all authority, and it talks about all the world, talks about all the divinity of God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit, baptizing them. And then he talks about teaching all the precepts of Jesus. And then it says, and I'll be with you every day. I'll be with you all the time. And so this king who came and then left has not deserted us. He is still with us. And we can work with that confidence. So in a sense, this is the end at this point. Every day is an end in a way. But it's also every day a beginning. And so Barbara and I pray every day, every morning, God, thank you for this day that you gave to us. Now, help us to use it in the way that you want us to do. And so we pray that every morning as we then continue the work that we do. So these are some ideas, some conveying of what we are involved in. And as we come to the end of this, it's a good time then to look at something else that hopefully will tie in with this idea of our mission, your mission, and how we can work together in that. You know, there's a text that we know real well. It's in Acts chapter 1, verse 1. And here it says, "And I write to you, Theophilus, the second time, the second letter, all that Jesus came to do and to say." That's a tremendous verse. The writer is writing to a person and saying, "Now, for the second time, I've come to you to teach you, to tell you all that Jesus said and did." Now, there's a tie. If you have your Bibles, you might even go over to Luke chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. And as you look at that passage, Luke is saying, "Now, this is what I'm doing. I've gone through and talked to people, and I've gotten a message from them, a direct testimony of what Jesus said and did." And he said, "I'm writing this to you, O excellent Theophilus. I'm telling you what you have heard." He had heard some things about what Jesus had done and said. I'm writing to you about that. And then he comes to Acts 1:1, and the same Theophilus is now being the target of his writing. He says, "I'm writing you the second one." So he wrote Luke, he wrote Acts. That's our writer, Luke. He wrote this amount of the New Testament. And when you calculate that, Luke, in Luke and Acts, wrote most of the New Testament. Luke wrote more than Paul. And here's what's significant from Acts 1 and Luke 1. He wrote all of that. The majority of the New Testament was written to one person. Of course, it comes to us today, and we listen to it, we search it, we study it. But in fact, originally, Luke, Acts, the majority of the New Testament was written to one person. And the reason I mention that is that we want to give emphasis to what one person can do. You know, Luke was trying to convert Theophilus. Now, the word means lover of God. But in Luke chapter 1, he says, "Most excellent Theophilus." And this term, excellent, it reveals that it's a person. He's writing to some kind of official who was high in the army or the Roman government. And so as he writes to one person, his purpose is to convert that person. The majority of the New Testament specifically was written to one person to convert one person. You know, there's other examples of that. In Acts, you have in chapter 8, here is Philip the evangelist. He's involved in a campaign. It's a successful campaign, evangelistic campaign, with people believing and being baptized. Even some of the most eminent people, such as Simon the magician, who had a high reputation. And here he is, he was converted. So all of this is going on in this campaign in Samaria. And then God, through the Spirit, comes and says, "Philip, leave the campaign and go down to where I'll show you." And so Philip leaves that successful work to go down. And what does he do? He finds one person. The value of one person in the plan of God. To talk to study with, and help the conversion of one person. Another example, which I like very much, is that is connected with Antioch. Antioch was a city that was unique, grand, the second largest city, in fact, in the Roman Empire at that time. But in that city, you had something that was a first time something. It was the first time there was a mixed church. Now, by mixed, I mean you had Jews and you had Greeks in one church. That hadn't happened before. Now, we have Cornelius and his conversion. Nothing is said about a church being formed at that time. But more than likely, those people in Antioch knew of that event. And when they were there, they began to go out and reach the Greek people. And the text says, and that's important, it says, and God was with them. God approved what they were doing, to go out to the people that were not the common people around them, the Jews in this case, to reach out to those other people out there. And they did, as they did so, there was success in what they did. So there were now God raising up teachers in that church. It was a good church. But the people in Jerusalem heard about it. And so they wondered, what can we do to help that church up there? It wasn't that they sent someone to reproach that church. Later on, there was some dissension about the Jew-Gentile arrangement. But they chose someone whose name was Joseph. Does that ring a bell with you? Joseph was his name. But his nickname was what? Barnabas. Barnabas was his nickname. And what does Barnabas mean? Son of encouragement. A person who encourages. And so the people in Jerusalem, the church in Jerusalem, sent an encourager up to Antioch. And Barnabas arrives and he encourages the church because God was with them. And all these teachers were there. And then Barnabas realized, you know, there's something missing. And so he left that church and went to Tarsus to look for one person. He was looking for Paul. After his conversion, he went down to Jerusalem. Barnabas introduced him to the others. And then Paul went back to his hometown. But what did he do there? We don't know for sure. But we know when Barnabas then went several hundred miles to find Paul, he had to look for him. And I'm sure Paul was out evangelizing somewhere. But he found him and brought him back to Antioch. And when he brought him back to Antioch, he spent a year there with Barnabas and the other teachers. But out of that group, then, the Holy Spirit chose a mission team. And this church of Antioch, mixed as it was, became a mission church. And sent out with the help of the Holy Spirit, this mission team, with one person that Barnabas went to get in the mission team, and then they went out. One person. And we go over and over with lots of illustrations of that. Let me give you one illustration, and we'll close with that. One time, there was a distribution made in Geneva, and the card that we put in the mailbox, which we could do, was then responded to, and this one person began to take the correspondence course. And over a period of time, this person finished. And so we prepared the certificate and took it to her, knocking at the door, and gave it to her. Her name was Lala. She was a 14-year-old girl. Lala was receptive to the correspondence course, but we wanted to study personally with her. So we asked if we could do that. She said, I'll have to ask my father. And of course, we kind of thought, well, that's the end of it. But her father came. We talked to him. He was agreed. So we began studies. And eventually the whole family, four children, an aunt that was staying with them, all became Christians in the church in Geneva. But John Ratovaheri, which was his name, was a diplomat from Madagascar. And he then was several years in Geneva. Then he went to Paris, became an elder. Then he went to Washington as a diplomat. And then he came back to Madagascar. Barbara and I went with them, stayed 2 months, and the church was established. I'd already been there on several trips, and on one trip I had met a man who was a taxi driver and got him enrolled in the correspondence course. He was converted, and he became the first evangelist in Madagascar. And then John Ratovaheri came and was established, having been converted through, you might say, his daughter, a 14-year-old girl. One person. Who brought on then the evangelization of the whole island of Madagascar. several churches now, an orphanage there now, all because of one person. And you are one person. What can God do with you? God is at work. But first of all, he is at work with you before you think of 500 million people elsewhere. So what is it that he can do with you? And that decision depends on who you are. First, you have to be a child of God. He uses his children for what he wants in the world. And so if you're not a child of God, then you should change that, because otherwise you can't work with him. He can't work with you until you are submitted to him. And when you come to him in faith and obedience in baptism, then you become his child. But now you are a child of God, and you sit there and do nothing. No, you don't, but some do. And because of that, then, nothing happens in the kingdom to glorify God. And so what can he do with you? What is he going to do in and through you? And you can change a continent, if not a country. And because of that, then, any kind of mission message that I might give has no real significance until it begins to make a difference in your heart. And your mission may be your family. Your mission may be the neighbor next door. Your mission may be the person that helps you have gas at the service station regularly. You know, each of us have our mission, and God can use us. But at the same time, we have to be sure that our own hearts are correct before him. Because, you know, some of you may be the worst of hypocrites, and you've done a good job to cover it up. Some of you may be walking prideful people, and you've covered it up to make it seem that you're humble. Well, God knows that, and you know that you are not pure before him. So it may be that you need to correct that too. We'll have an invitation. You know, Jesus always gave his invitation in a public way. He calls people to him in a public way, and we do that too. So this evening, in some way, anything has touched your heart that you would want to respond, do so as stand to sing.